cliffcentral.com.
Yeah, it's Marcy Playground and Sex and Candy. Beautiful, Frey. Ah, Thursday morning. Now, the nice thing about Thursday is it's obviously one day away from the weekend. People like that. The other thing that makes Thursday special is that Justice Malala pops by to give us a little bit of insight, a little bit of analysis, some thought-provoking ideas around what's going on in the world. Today, he has a steaming list of questions. It's the Burning Platform. It's brought to you every Thursday by Nando's. Nando's, who not only show that they can make amazing, amazing food all over the world. I know people in Australia and in Britain and in America who love Nando's, but they also support fun and laughter, and they also support interesting, smart political opinion. And that's what we try to do in the latter of those three mentioned things. And the person that we've decided is the best person to talk about these things is Justice Malala, because he manages to take even really, really sad, miserable situations and find a reason for us to have a sense of humor about them. Morning, Justice.
Good morning. Good morning. I think it's a terrible day, actually, to be talking politics after what we heard yesterday from the Gauteng government and what happened with those 94
psychiatric patients.
If you think about it, it's shocking, Gareth. I can't tell you just the thought. People died of starvation. People died of dehydration. Basically, we took people out of 1,900 people out of government. Well, out of a pretty secure environment. Because we wanted to save money, apparently. And took them to places which were not registered, which were not vetted. These people dying of starvation means that over days and perhaps weeks, you're not given food and you die.
I mean, we all have seen those pictures from World War II.
Exactly.
We've seen those pictures of people in concentration camps emaciated, and some of them still lived, even though they looked like that.
Exactly.
It's appalling that this should happen in a country which prides itself on having a government, first of all, having a health department, having public health care.
Exactly.
And the fact that these people are psychiatric patients is even more sad to me, because it means that they were in no way empowered to voice their discomfort.
It says we are a bully state. The weak, the vulnerable, those who cannot stand up, speak up for themselves, will be just let loose to be mauled and killed and bullied by the strong and the powerful. It says absolutely the worst things about us as a people, that if I can't stand up now for those who cannot stand up for themselves, if this government can't stand up for those who cannot stand up for themselves, then who will stand up for those people? And this is the key here, that it was, their lives are worth way less than my life, your life, because they are mental patients, they are psychiatric patients. What exactly, how did we get to this place? And I think it's fantastic and it's great that Tretani Mahlangu resigned on the evening before the report was released yesterday. But it is nowhere close.
Well, we finally found at what level your dereliction of duties ultimately will persuade you to do the right thing and step down. Because we've always asked, when people are caught with their hands in the till, when people are caught doing nefarious things, when people go against what is good for the whole of the population of South Africa, and nobody ever resigns, we always ask, what would it take? Well, the deaths of so many people, clearly, that's where the line is. So perhaps we've discovered one thing in all of this, and that is what government's level of tolerance for complete incompetence must be.
I don't know if actually this is it.
I don't think so.
I think that what we've seen is that, I mean, this thing is so bad, guys. It's so terrible. We starved people to death. But worse than all of it, is that for months and actually years, for 2.5 years, people have known about this and done nothing about it. They pretended that it's not happening. They pretended that, no, they are on the right track. People went and said, oh, you know what? Justice is running his own little facility there, but it's not registered. So they'd come then and said, sorry, I gave you the wrong paper to register. Let me give you the real one now, just to cover their tracks. So it's not just the crime itself. It's the covering up of the crime. That's how bad this thing was, this collusion to just essentially try to shut it down. The officials couldn't tell Malegapuri Makgoba how many people they transferred, how many people had died. They didn't know. They didn't care to know. So I think when it comes to culpability, Katani Masangu and the HOD and maybe the nine officials named and so forth, yes, we're somewhere there. But where was the... Now, this is where the challenge for all of us, I think particularly us in the media, in the public space, is. One of the best governments in South Africa is the Gauteng government. Mm. It does a pretty good job. And that's the challenge for all of us, is to say, these guys are good and we admire them. We think they do well, blah, blah, blah. But they did one terrible thing. And the question has to be asked about David Makura. Where was he 1 year ago exactly? Because this issue was bubbling 1 year ago.
Yep.
This issue, I think we even spoke about it in this and on this show.
I remember it.
A year ago. So between then and now, how many people actually died? And for him to say yesterday, oh, we won't even wait for the 34 days or whatever days that Malegapuri Makgoba gave them and say, no, we're going to do it this week, tonight, we're starting work. What about the year? What about the year and a half that people have been saying, parents have been saying, please don't take my kids, don't take my relatives to this. It's mind-boggling. So I think at some point we have to ask ourselves, this cabinet has to ask us itself, what did we do? When did we say it's right? When David Makura is really one of those premiers you admire hugely, but what about him? Yeah. What about, is he going to take some form of responsibility?
You know, one rotten apple spoils the whole barrel. So you've got a situation here where this government has done a very good job, by and large, with almost all of their departments. It's one of the few ANC-led municipalities where we can really say there's been a lot of service delivery. There's been a focus on residents of the cities and of the province that they run. But this one thing is so appalling.
It's so deep. It's shocking. But part of it is the arrogance of power. When I walk in here and I say, Ben, this is not working, let's change course. Humility, leadership means that Ben and all of us in the room have to start saying, okay, guys, are we on the right track? Is it time to tweak? Is it time? But yeah. Again and again, it was, oh, this racist DA or these parents and relatives, they don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
And so arrogantly just, no, we're not going to do anything about it. And again, ignore advice, ignore what is clearly before you. I mean, if you think about it, 6 months ago, all of us were saying, this looks so bad. And yet nothing was done. And so we find ourselves in this situation where, you know, this for me, this scandal exposes all of us that are we really concentrating on the things that matter? Where is the outrage from so many who've been outraged by, the Guptas have been victimized and so forth? When ordinary people, when people who are weak and cannot stand up for themselves have been so abandoned by a government, an administration, which, you know, one of the things I'd really like to do is for people to go and read Nelson Mandela's first opening of Parliament speech in 1994.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela quoted a poet, what was her name, from the Cape. But she wrote a poem about the child in Khayelitsha. And the poem was about how, Mandela's reference was about how, if there is anything that we as a people, as a country, as a government are going to be about, it's going to be about the child in Khayelitsha, the most, the abandoned, the child who has no one to protect them. That will be what this administration will be about. And the metaphor was about the poor, the helpless, the desperate. This government would stand up for them. Here we are, 23 years later. The poem was by, it was Ingrid Jonker he was quoting.
Okay.
Here we are 23 years later. The child in Khayelitsha, the poor, the desperate, the helpless, we've thrown them under the bus. We've said, you know what? We'll be too busy fighting battles for one family or whatever, and we'll forget about those poor. This is where, for me, it's an absolute scandal. It's a tragedy.
And we know that no amount of reparation or criminal prosecution is going to make it better for the families who've lost their loved ones or for the suffering that those poor people must have gone through in the last few weeks of their lives. But there should be criminal prosecutions in tow. You know, Sean Abrahams' joke of a department, the NPA, that's meant to be worrying about important things in this country and prosecuting very, very bad people, is concerned about a complaints letter they got from someone about Gerry Nel, just because Gerry Nel dropped them and moved on to something else, and they're not happy about that. He should be prosecuting everyone in the chain that led to this event.
I tell you now, the NPA should right now have that report by Dr. Makhoba in its hand, perusing every single line saying what happened here. The first... I'm not a legal mind. I'm not legally trained. I think I took one course, one law course once, thinking I might become a lawyer. But I tell you, you don't have. There's a line, and some people have drawn attention to it in that report yesterday. That line is when it becomes clear that many of those places were not accredited, did not have any kind of legal jurisdiction to operate as facilities for the handicapped, for these psychiatric patients. So they were taken there. So that's your first, you're going to prosecute whoever took them there. That's your first conviction.
Second conviction is the people who ran these unlicensed places.
Exactly.
The third one is the people who gave them the fake licenses.
And then the people who tried to cover up.
They should all go to jail.
They should all go to jail. It's easy as ABC. But I'm telling you now, Sean Abrahams and convictions, I think that's... that's a bridge too far, but we must hope. We must live in hope. But clearly, people must go to jail for this. If people don't go to jail for this, it means, you know, there was a time when we used to find it funny and sad that GP stood for Gangsters Paradise. But if these guys don't go to jail, then it's a real paradise for anyone who breaks the law. You just don't do anything about it.
You said to me that there's a silver lining in Jack Blum. I don't understand.
Jack Blum is the DA MPL, who the shadow minister of health, if you will, in Gauteng. Jack Blum is an interesting man. 20 years ago, about 18-19 years ago, Jack Blum was an MPL in Gauteng, and he was pursuing issues of health and healthcare in Gauteng, and he's been doing it for the past 20 years from his seat in the Gauteng legislature. In this case, he consistently pointed out, when relatives went up to the government and said, look what's happening here, government didn't listen, they went to him, and he raised this issue again and again and again. Because of Jack Blum, who didn't stop taking on this issue? Who didn't stop tackling Gadani Mahlangu when he was called racist, when he was called all kinds of names? Today we have this report by Dr. Makhoba. So a lot of people might say, oh, you know, where was government? Where we didn't know and so forth. One politician listened to those families and did something about it. And so for people like me, I believe in politics. I believe in politicians. I believe in systems that we can, through politics, do good. And I think an example of when politics works for the people is what Jack Bloom did with this case. He didn't say, these guys don't vote for me. He probably said, maybe if we keep on, they'll vote for us. And that's what politicians do. But the fact that he kept on and on with it should encourage other MPs out there who see things that shouldn't be happening to stand up and say, man, I'm going to stand up against this. So I'm interested in those communications portfolio committee members in parliament who suddenly have been very vocal about the SABC and so forth and so forth. It's great that they are, and I want them to continue to be like that. But next time someone comes along and says the SABC is in a mess, they mustn't wait years and years before they act. And that's what Jack Bloom didn't wait. He's been on this issue for more than 2 years. And he's made noise. He's been da-da-da and so forth.
I didn't know about any of this.
So, you know, people like that and people like, you know, Floyd Shivambu standing up, whatever you might think about him, or people in the DA or people in the EFF, many people in the EFF, people like Teralekota and Cope, Bantu Holomisa, who highlights many fantastic issues in parliament. This is where politics works, and this is where this democracy needs to be stronger, to hold power to account. And I think Jack Bloom, by fighting this issue so hard, when we thought there were 34, or when we thought there were 49, or when we thought there were 74 people who had died, it turns out
94.
And remember what Dr. Makhoba says. This is a provisional number because those officials, the MEC, don't even know how many people died. They don't even know. The top three officials in the Gauteng Health Department don't know today how many people they're responsible for having sent out to die. They don't know. This is how bad it is. So,
Supernova says here on WeChat this morning, our government caused the deaths of 94 mentally ill patients in Gauteng, and those responsible still have their jobs? How is this even possible? But then again, those responsible for the death of the 41 miners in Marikana also have all their jobs. It's disgusting. Well, except Ria Piejo, who's been put on indefinite. I mean, this woman is on... How long have we been paying her salary even though she's sitting at home?
Oh, I mean, that happened in 2012.
12. So it's 4 years?
4.5 years.
So we're
now
paying for her to sit at home.
Yeah.
What a nice job. Imagine being paid to sit at home.
It's one of those things where you just wait and wait and wait. And by the time you act, there's no impact. There's no learnings
taken the air out of it.
You know, a lot of people have been using that expression, justice delayed, justice denied. And this is the thing about the Marikana massacre. It's what value do you place on life? And these actions say, once again, we don't care. The only reason that, you know, there'll be an investigation into Gareth or Justice's life is because, oh, they have some money and so forth. But if you're a citizen of South Africa, you're poor, you're marginalized, you're vulnerable, you're not powerful, then your life means nothing. It's absolutely nothing.
I'm afraid that's the truth.
That is the depressing part. There's another silver lining to this. Dr. Makhoba's report is an amazing piece of work. It is comprehensive. It is deep. It points fingers. Aaron Motsoaledi, the health minister, said yesterday at the release of the report that, you know, when he started this Ombud for Health, he did say that he wanted a public protector for health. And many people said, no, do you really need another office, an office like this? But if this is the kind of work that's going to come out of that office, we need more institutions like this. It reminds me of the best work that Thulima Donsela did, particularly around Nkandla. It reminds me of the responsibility that our new public protector has to produce work of this quality, of this depth, and of this rigor, because I found it incredible just listening again and again to what was said about this report, that it's, if we can continue to dig deep into what our politicians and our government officials do in this way, then maybe some accountability will be there. We need the political backbone to do it. But I thought, you know, what Jack Bloom did by staying on, holding on to this issue for years, and what Dr. Makhoba did by investigating so comprehensively, really gives me hope that somehow
parts,
we'll
parts
get
of the
that.
System definitely work.
Parts of the system definitely work, but man, the parts that don't work are shocking. And you sit there and say, how can you produce a Dr. Makhoba who gives you a report of this stature and magnificence, and have on the other side a government that allows this sort of thing to happen? We're pulling in two different directions almost all the time.
Can you explain to us, because this is another story that's broken this week, and it was already in the news, it was bubbling around last year, about Batabile Dlamini and her department, the sheer incompetence there at SASSA, and how an unlawful and very expensive tender is going to continue for another year just because we didn't get our stuff sorted out in time. This department, this is how corruption happens.
This is how corruption doesn't just happen, but thrives.
Because you create a crisis.
Exactly.
You don't do anything to solve the crisis. And then huge amounts of money must be spent post-fact in order to fix the problem. Otherwise, millions of people in South Africa will go without their social grants.
Exactly. So you remember last year when you spoke about this, I think it was September, October last year, there are 17 million, nearly 17, certainly 16.9 million people on social grants in South Africa. So at the end of this month, there will be 17 million payments made to a child, to a pensioner, to all kinds of people. Imagine if at the end of March, children, families across South Africa who receive 450 rand per child, or old people who receive 1.2 thousand rand a month, suddenly don't get it. I think that will be the real test of the stability of this country, because I tell you, people will be up in arms saying, this is unacceptable.
Absolutely.
So for years, we have known that at the end of March, people need to know that they will be paid by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
The people who pay the 17 million social grant people who receive the social grant every month are Cashmaster Payment Services, CPS. Cashmaster was taken to court by people who lost the tender. The Constitutional Court said this tender was done wrongly.
Mm-hmm.
It was unlawful. It was illegal, and it should stop. But because of the scale of it, because you cannot stop it immediately and just not pay people, the Constitutional Court said, yes, it's unlawful. This tender was terrible. Corruption happened. But you don't want to start social upheaval in South Africa. So continue, but start now to make sure that this thing is over. When this contract comes to an end, it's over. So it goes on and goes on. Now, APSA or other banks in South Africa, other people, like consortia, have been lining up saying, where's the tender? We want to be the next guy. So Mabale right. says, I can pay this. And Ben says, I can pay this. I can do this. I can. I have the systems. I have the... Think of a bank like... a bank with footprints all over. African bank.
Yeah,
FNB.
Yeah,
we all, right. all of them saying, no, no, we can get this. We can pay people. Batabile Dlamini, the Minister of Social Development, says, no, we will do it ourselves as government.
Why?
A year ago, people say, you say you will do it yourself. Are you ready? So, oh, we don't worry about
yeah.
it. She gets called to Parliament to account. She doesn't pitch up. Yesterday, she was called to Parliament. She didn't pitch up. She never goes to Parliament. And perhaps that explains why some people go on Facebook and call other people names in defense of her. Anyway, the upshot is that in December, there was a big, big hoo-ha. Are you ready? Because it's 3 months to go. Will you pay? Show us the plan. How are you going to do this? Oh, don't worry, don't worry. We'll do it. Yesterday, without the minister, the officials at SASSA are made to go to Parliament, and they say, we are sorry to tell you this, but we have failed. We won't be able to do it. So now government is going to pay some high-powered lawyers 50,000 rand a day to go to the Constitutional Court and say, yes, this tender was corrupt. Yes, it was unlawful. Yes, it should have been scrapped. But please, we are begging you, can we continue with it for another year? So even when something is wrong and illegal, we are paying lawyers to go and say, we want to continue with the illegal stuff. That is how corruption is allowed. It's encouraged. I mean, is happening with Batabile Dlamini? This is a minister who should be fired. She should have been fired, but she won't be fired. You know why? Because she is the leader of the ANC Women's League.
Right.
And the ANC Women's League is in a faction that's aligned to the person who appoints ministers. That's President Zuma. And they have come out very clearly that they want Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma to succeed President Zuma. And so it's just part of the architecture. Scratch my back, I scratch your back, and it's all okay.
How is this possible? How is it possible that someone who's brought us this close to what would be the test for revolution and the stability of the state is allowed to maintain her job? How is it that a president who allows that kind of thing for his own purposes, in other words, he's putting his own needs ahead of everyone else in the country in such a blatant way? There are other blatant ways he's done it before, but this one seems so cynical that he would be willing to put in jeopardy the 17 million people who need those social grants.
Yeah.
How do they think they can get away with it? And how do we do something about it?
No.
How do we do something about this?
The point is this. It's happening and it's going to happen. And I tell you, in December this year, Cash Paymaster Services will be paying out social grants. Batabile Dlamini will be the Minister of Social Development, or she will have been promoted to an even more powerful position. And absolutely no one will be held accountable for this. So it's just par for the course. It's the arrogance of power again. We can do it, and we will do it. And so it's going to happen. It's when people should be up in arms, the minister should be so angry that people who are paying, who are working for her, got this tender illegally. But she's not. She's going to court, to the Constitutional Court, to say, these corrupt people, can I just continue with them? That's so nice.
And then we've got to ask ourselves, who on that side is benefiting and how are they benefiting?
I think there have been stories done by the Mail and Guardian, Amabungani in particular. Mm-hmm. There are people who have benefited and benefited hugely. And there's a trail that leads to some political players. How did Cash Paymaster Services get that tender in the first place? Who were the political players who are close to this tender? And you have to ask them, are those political players, particularly members, former members of the ANC Youth League who've become millionaires, particularly in the Cape? The question needs to be asked. How are they making other people who are in power now benefit? And I am convinced that we are not over the political shenanigans and machinations. What would be nice would be for someone to come into office in a few months or in a few years and say, we're going to look into who benefited.
And take it away from them.
And take it away from them. That would be an interesting thing, because if you have a multi-billion tender like this one, this tender is not, you know, Mabale and her 50,000 rand tender there. These are billions of rand. And it will be interesting to see one day when the book is written and the investigation is done. But we know, one thing that we know is that the Constitutional Court has already told us it was illegal, it was unlawful. But hey, let's keep going with the illegal.
And when you're administering 17 million social grants, can you imagine the kind of percentage you take off of administering each of those transactions?
But it's not just, you know, every
I mean, if they take a rand for everyone they do, they've got 17 million rand a month.
And I can tell you,
a month,
it's not 17 million rand a month. It's way more.
Oh my God. Makes me sick.
It's big time money. It's big time money. And that is why this story is not just watched here, it's watched all over the world, because it's big, big money for a lot of people.
All right, Justice, last thing is Zimbabwe. Let's just look at Zimbabwe.
Let's just go
what's
now.
Been happening from the sublime to the ridiculous?
I just wanted to say, for me, there was a beautiful correlation. Yesterday, I think you interviewed even Mawarire here.
Mm, we did. We had him in here when he just left Zimbabwe for the first time, and he was frightened. He was very frightened for his life at that stage.
So yesterday, he gets on a plane from Joburg. He says, I'm quietly going home because I don't want to be in exile. I don't want to live outside of my country. Mm. And he goes home. He lands in Harare, and he gets arrested. And it's the same old playbook. How many times have we sat here? How many times have I or other people, yourselves, written, spoken about Zimbabwe and the state it's in? One of the things I find interesting about Zimbabwe today. So if today you're in Zimbabwe and your kid is in school, 6-year-old, 7-year-old running around, and you go to the school and you say, oh, I've got money, I want to pay school fees. Mm. And you say, here's the, what is it called now? Government, the bond note. And you've got your government bonds.
Right.
And they say, okay, it's 50 government bonds or whatever.
I saw one of those notes yesterday for the first time.
Yeah, if you touched it, then you know the color goes off. So yeah. Be careful there.
No, really.
So if you go to a Zimbabwean school and say, I've come to pay for my kids' school fees, and you give them the government's new money, this bond note, the school will tell you, are you joking? I'm not taking that. Now, this is a government institution saying, no way. A friend of mine tells me, a policeman say, you got to pay a fine. And he say, ah, yeah, it is. And they say, what? You giving me that? What are you? You think I'm a joke? But this is government tender. So the government itself will not take its own money. It thinks its own money is rubbish. I want to use a stronger word. Please, may I use a stronger
crap
word?
Crap, yeah, of course you can.
So the government itself prints this money and says, you go use it, Mabali. But no, it don't take its own money. It's what is going on?
You know, so what is the point? I mean, the whole reason you have a currency is so that you can trade, so that people can take that currency as a promise exactly. that there will be a certain amount of value attached
and
to it.
That is our money here in South Africa. I don't know if anyone's got cash in here, but it says, I promise to pay on demand.
Yeah,
the bearer, da, right. da, da. But this in Zimbabwe, it's I give it to you, but I don't promise to pay you on demand when you bring this thing.
Yeah.
So government departments themselves, government people, government entities, don't take their own money. It's a country that's collapsed. It's a country that's collapsed. But I was interested in this. In 2002, there was an election in Zim. That election was stolen. That election was fraudulent, and Robert Mugabe stole that election. I know this, and I can say this because Thabo Mbeki sent Judge Sisi Kampepe mm-hmm. and another judge.
I remember that.
And they came back. They gave him a report saying, "Yo, that was the most fraudulent. You've never seen that kind of stuff going on." And he took the report and hid it. The Mail and Guardian, other people went and applied in court saying, release the report, we want to see it. And government fought until 2 years ago
yeah.
to keep that report under wraps. So we know that 2002 was stolen. We know that 2008 was stolen. We know that after Mugabe lost the parliamentary election, where MDC got a majority of the seats in parliament, people were detained, beaten up, and ensured that Mugabe won the presidential election. So who was our foreign minister in South Africa when all that was happening? It was Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. Then she left. She went to the African Union, and at the African Union, we saw in Gambia the other day, Yahya Jammeh mm-hmm. Finally kicked out, and Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma said, yay, you see democracy on the continent, and so forth and so forth. Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma is coming back home. There'll be a cabinet reshuffle, good people, anytime soon, and she'll get a seat in cabinet as a minister, maybe a minister in the presidency or some other ministry. So Zimbabwe will still be a place where Evan Mawarire, for wearing his country's flag around his neck, is still arrested arbitrarily by the police. So between 2002 and 2017, 15 years later, Zimbabwe is still a basket case where ordinary people can live, can pay school fees, and even Mawarire can be arrested just like that, and it's just normal. And we basically just have washed our hands of that country. It's like, you know what? They suffer, and their people run away and come and work in this country. And hey, you know what? Doesn't matter. We'll just arrest them while they're waiting tables at my favorite restaurant, and life goes on.
Jesus, what a sad situation.
So one of the things is, no one really can put the number to how many Zimbabweans live in South Africa, how many Zimbabweans have fled their country to the U.S., to Australia, to the U.S., wherever. But it's a great example of how a small coterie of people can just run rings around millions of people, impoverish them,
It's like
oppress
a,
them.
It's like a slave class that's beneath the rest of us. And just like with Adani Mahlangu and the Gauteng Health Department, just abusing these people.
It's absolutely abusing these people.
These Zimbabweans who have to come to South Africa, and many of them have had to put aside their many university degrees and their pride and go and take up a job washing cars or cleaning houses or making food or whatever it might be. And the sad thing is that our future president, if we're to believe the ANC, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, our future president will have put them in that situation by not acting.
By not acting, but for years and years and years.
I'm not talking about the AU. I'm talking about her time as foreign minister.
Yeah, by buttressing, by standing up for what has been happening in Zimbabwe. It's a tragedy, really. It's a shocker. But Zimbabwe will continue with its 94-year-old leader. Is he 94?
He's old as the hills.
Yeah, and he's still going. And when he leaves, Grace will become president, and it's all hunky-dory. So, on that positive note.
All right. Well, thank you, Justice. Yeah, let's try to be more positive next week. If there is positive stuff, we can't lie. We're not going to put our heads in the sand, right?
We can't put our heads in the sand. But we did have some positive news.
Yeah.
I think what Dr. Makoba did with that report is fantastic. I think Jack Bloom deserves a medal for standing up for so long for what is right. And whether you like the opposition, whether you like the DA or not, that's what an MP should do. They should stand up for ordinary people. And he did that.
All right. Thank you, Justice. And have a lovely week and a good weekend coming up. We will check in with Justice next week. Same time, same place.
Oh, by the way, next week, big day. President Zuma gives his State of the Nation address on the evening of the 9th. We'll talk about that.
We'll be here that morning.
What do people want him to talk about?
Will he be able to speak? For the last couple of years, it's been more of a question of who's listening.
Julius Malema has already said that, you know what, they're going to tackle him. So it will be interesting to see how they tackle him, because we know how they have raised points of orders and so forth and so forth. So I'm looking forward to something a little bit fresher this year.
Is Julius going to be there, though? Isn't he on study break again?
He's on study break again, and I must say, you know, that's a good thing. But, you know, I'm sure Floyd and Buisen, they'll all be there. It's and of course the white shirts, or the waiters as they're called, will also be there. It's going to be fun.
His favorite cater deployment, security. I was pushed into the left-hand lane this morning by another blue light brigade. So many cars.
I think you should be grateful that a politician is up at that time.
We should be.
I think you should actually go on your knees. I have a feeling
it's got nothing to do with service delivery or their actual government responsibilities, and everything to do with the fact that they're in crisis meetings to figure out how to keep a certain person out of jail. That's what I think.
All right, thanks, Justice. Scandals in this country.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
All
cheers.
Right. Justice Malala, The Burning Platform. It's brought to you every week by Nando's.
Just the guitar, okay, cool.
CliffCentral.com.
It's Adele. Say hello to, or send my love to, your new lover. What is it called? Yeah, send my love to your new lover.
She was very bitter about that guy, wasn't she?
I don't know. I think Adele, I think she's actually a happy person. I don't think Adele's bitter at all.
Yeah, but her best music came out from that guy who worked at the chip shop who dumped her.
Yeah, the guy at the chip shop.
Yeah. And then all her work came from that. And that's Adele.
All right. No, I like it. Very, very good. Okay, so, Mabali Moloi, there are a couple of news stories we haven't had a chance to get to this morning. We've got a little bit of time before we have Cheryl Delaray from the University of Pretoria to talk about the state of tertiary education in South Africa. So what do you want to throw in there while you've got a little free space and time?
Which is the most dangerous sex position for men?
For men, that would be the, I forget the name now.
Describe it.
Okay, so you're standing up.
Reverse cowgirl.
Okay, you're standing up.
So you're standing up, basically cradling your lover
Against a wall or something.
Against a wall. Yeah. In the process of getting to the wall to anchor yourself, essentially.
Mm.
Sure.
Yeah, because if you look, first of all, let's just put this out there. Not everyone can pull that move off. It's a hard move to pull. You need to have soft walls. You can't have things on the walls.
And you need strong thighs and a good posture.
You need a very strong back if you're the man. Yeah,
it's the back.
And you've got to lift her up. Plus, the danger here, danger, is that the penis will snap if there is a sudden drop.
Well, with good core strength and control, your penis obviously has room to move.
Well,
but if you're really struggling on just the actual...
Don't boast. All right?
I saw.
How dare you?
I saw a picture of lesbians the other day. The one woman is lifted up on...
A picture?
Yeah.
What would it do? How did you find this picture?
It was sent to me.
Oh.
It's in the book on a coffee table.
It was sent to me.
That's what I'm thinking.
The one woman is lifted. Her back is towards the wall.
Yeah.
Her thighs are straddled across her partner's shoulders.
Yeah.
And the partner is...
Gee, that is some position.
Yeah, the partner is a very strong girl.
I always knew Ellen was stronger than she looked.
Even at her age of 50-something.
Yeah, good for her.
So, good old cowgirl, Gareth, not reverse cowgirl, woman on top.
Oh?
That is considered the most dangerous sex position for men. Estimates say that up to one-third of adults will suffer some kind of injury during or directly from sexual relationships. And sometimes you won't even realize until the following morning that you have injured your penis.
Have you not realized you injured your penis?
You know you've... I would know straight away. Yes, I would be screaming like a schoolgirl.
It's not like a rugby game where you get a straight punch in the ruck. I mean, it's pretty much a focus area of sex. It's your penis.
Whoa,
you know what? I imagine for a few seconds there might be confusion because she'd be thinking, oh, he really likes it today.
Yeah.
You know, with you screaming. It would take a while for her to realize, oh no, he's screaming from pain, not from pleasure. So here's the problem with the cowgirl position. At times, there's not enough lubrication when the woman goes to sit on the penis.
Right.
Well, that's your own fault.
Ow. If there's enough force or friction or the penis catches on the pubic bone, and that's when that bend will occur in that ligament, which then puts your penis at stress, which then can break it.
Hmm.
Oof, I'd love to hear from people who've suffered real sex injuries.
Like, I don't want to hear from them.
No, I want to hear.
Look, sex is a contact sport, okay? You're going to get injured.
No, but hang on. My belly takes an acute, nasty pleasure out of penis injuries especially.
You just got to just run it off.
She really does. I've heard some horror stories in my life of these things that can happen. As Ben says, sex is a contact sport.
It really is.
But I don't like to hear them because I immediately clench my legs together. I get a pain, a shooting pain from my balls when I think about the kinds of injuries you could have in that area.
Yeah, but Gareth, at the same time, you got to move on. You
move on.
You got to roll with the punches in life. Know that you, with every bit of pain...
Move on to what?
Have you ever suffered bruising from sex? Because that is an indication of you having been injured. This is where they say some people don't even realize it until the following morning.
Because
all of a sudden now there's a bruise and you're like,
I don't want to think. Please, I don't want to think about it. Please. Hurts me. Roscoe says, honestly, how does a person ignore the plight of a person they have been charged to care for? He's talking obviously about what Justice brought up this morning.
Mm.
I'm truly ashamed and sad. I think it hits me harder because I have young kids, and as a parent, you see firsthand how helpless another human being can be. Those accused of these crimes are bastards. Actually, I shed a few tears. And Avi even saying who should be in jail and when.
Yeah, there really needs to be a thorough follow-up done on criminal charges in this instance. It's absolutely appalling.
And then a couple of the usuals, Kerry saying Justice Malala for president, but Justice is too smart to run for president. The government must be prosecuted. It's murder, says Marita. Imagine if Trump, as a joke, appointed a real Nazi, like one with a swastika tattoo in his neck. What would they say then? You see, this is the point. They've already shot their load on that front. The government must be prosecuted. This is murder. A lot of people saying that. What can we do? Dr. Nozipho Siman says, I'm listening to you guys on the Cliff Central app. Justice is awesome. Yeah. Thank you for all your messages. We keep an eye on all of them as they come through. Sometimes we do get to them, sometimes we don't, but I promise you we see every single one. Sure. All right. So please, sex injuries, let's keep those to a minimum if you don't mind. What else?
Well, I mean, that's it, Gareth.
So that's all we got time for.
Yeah, well, you know.
All right. Well, Professor Cheryl Delaray is the Vice Chancellor and Rector of the University of Pretoria. They've got an amazing new way of looking at certain things in universities and tertiary education institutions, and some that are more traditional. And they managed to walk the line. The most interesting thing I thought was the way that they handled those student protests last year, the Fees Must Fall movement and all of that stuff. And I thought it might be interesting for us to chat to her and find out how they handled it, and also what they've got planned for the forthcoming academic year. You know, a lot of people are talking about what is on the agenda for 2017. Universities start very soon. Some of them start next week. Some of them have already begun registration and all the rest of it. So it's on everyone's mind. And we speak to her in a moment or two to find out exactly what's going on in her university, the university I went to. I won't say I was a particularly good example of a student. In fact, I know I wasn't. And then I've got to refer to this because it's been sent to me a couple of times by some people. Maite Nkwana Mashabane, she's our Minister of International Relations.
Yes.
Okay, and cooperation. Listen to this quickly. This is an interview that she did. And remember, she had that Al Jazeera interview that everybody thought was so bad, where she almost looked like she was in a trance.
Oh, wasn't this about how we knew nothing about Brexit, or getting my facts confused?
Yeah, she just appeared to be completely ignorant of the whole geopolitical scenario. It's like she was put in this job by the president because he needed to put someone in a job. He needed to give her some kind of role. And she's really not impressive as our foreign minister. I don't know who she's made friends with for us, who she's managed to bring in big international trade deals with. I don't know who she's put in embassies or helped to create relationships with in terms of foreign countries that we need to be friends with. I don't know what she's done. We can't quantify her contribution. And maybe that's my fault. I haven't done the research. Maybe we need to get her in here, talk to her about what's happening there. But listen to this interview.
African leaders are meeting in Addis Ababa for the 28th African Union Summit, and the election of the chairperson is expected to top the agenda. TVC's Voldy Karosa sat down with the Foreign Minister of South Africa to discuss the country's concerns ahead of the meeting. She started by asking how South Africa feels about the Kingdom of Morocco's bid to become the AU's 55th member state.
South Africa has made its position quite clear in Morocco. It does not want it to be readmitted. If it is readmitted, what will South Africa do?
South Africa has, and please don't speak for South Africa, because I have the mandate until the president arrives to speak on behalf of South Africa. And South Africans too. If you are South African, listen to what South Africans would say.
I mean, what a way to start an interview. Sure. Doesn't she sound very aggressive?
Completely.
And like she's full of her own importance here. I have the mandate. Please don't speak about... The journalist asking you a question. South Africa's already made their position clear in Morocco. It seems to be a point of view that has been articulated by your very department, you incompetent.
We are the product of our people's struggles and international support. That includes Morocco. We have no qualms or hangovers with any of the countries in the continent of Africa. And let me put it clearly to you again that South Africa has no declared enemy on our continent and globally. What we do recall of Morocco and of Polisario is that they supported our anti-apartheid struggle. That it's a fact of history. And that's what I have the mandate to.
It seems to me that she's so wrapped up in what each country's role was in the struggle, you know, what they personally owe the ANC or what the ANC personally owes them for support 30 years ago. That is the primary purpose and the thrust of all our international affairs at the moment. That is what she is focused on making sure our relationships depend on and are based on. This is someone who I would not trust to paint a wall in my house. She knows so little about geopolitics. Everything comes back to the struggle for her. Everything's about what governments were their friends during the anti-apartheid struggle and which governments were not. Here we have an actual modern situation in Morocco. We've spoken to Catherine Constantinides, right?
Yep.
About these Zarara Harawararari people, whatever they're called, who live in that part of... They have been treated just like black people were treated by the apartheid government in this country, by the Moroccans. You would think there'd be some empathy. She can't even articulate her thoughts properly.
Emphasize here. What will inform us on which country is applying for membership at the AU is that South Africa, as a member of the AU, will participate, will contribute, guided by the articles of membership, the values and principles, and the Constitutive Act. We must stick to the rules of the game. Rules not that which we will find convenient at a given time. If you go to a church, they'll take out the Bible. If you go to a mosque, they take out the Quran. If you go to other religions, they also have their holy books.
So there's the only two that she knows, so she's right.
Here, our holy book is the Constitutive Act of the African Union. So I do not, and I will not, deviate and call countries by names. I want to reiterate that we've got historic relations with the Sahrawi and Polisario and Morocco, if that's what you want me to emphasize.
Since you alluded to the election of the chairperson, I'm wondering who South Africa will support from the candidates.
Well, we have five candidates, all in good standing. We've got a candidate, Dr. Bilnomi.
Now she's going to enumerate. She's going to enumerate them. Instead of answering the question, she's going to tell us who the five candidates are, which we could look up with Google. I don't think she even knows how to use a smartphone. I don't want to be horrible here, but this is the most unbelievably incoherent interview I've heard in a long time.
But you don't think this is just like a template that goes out? So no matter role is in the movement,
yeah,
the government.
You can hear the platitudes.
It's all the same.
And talking about constitutive declarations. I mean, it's all nonsense. This politics that she's talking about, the kinds of politics that she's talking about, so irrelevant in a 2017 world that I can't help thinking it is a grave danger to us as a society that this woman is in charge of our international affairs. It is a danger to us. Foreign affairs is probably the most important, maybe you could say, you know, the armed forces. Foreign affairs is the most important, or one of the most important roles in cabinet. You put your smartest people in there. You put your most diplomatic, your most deft, your most intelligent, your most articulate, your most sensitive people in there, because you're going to handle the affairs of the world as they pertain to us and our affairs as they pertain to the world. I know 1,000 people. I don't know that many people, but I know I could. Any one of my Facebook friends would make a better minister than this woman. And they're probably more qualified.
Sure.
It's just, I can't play any more of it. It's going to drive me to drink. All right. Let's get to Cheryl Delaray. She is the Vice Chancellor and Rector of the University of Pretoria. That is coming up next on cliffcentral.com. I hope you're having a good start to your day. I hope that you are excited about the weekend, which is just a couple of days away. And we will continue with some excellent programming through the course of today. I can see that we've got, what is it, Thursday, right? So what do we have on a Thursday?
Yes, Gareth, it is Thursday.
We have on a Thursday. We've got a lot of amazing shows. I can't even remember right now because I'm so busy trying to sort all this stuff out for you. Let me get out of here and get Cheryl Delaray on her way. And if you've been wondering where Sia was, because a lot of people have been asking, he's been running a special project with us for Investec, and he will be back on tomorrow's show with me in Durban, and he'll be back on this in this studio with us on Monday next week. So lots of things to get involved in. All right, we'll see you tomorrow morning between 6 and 9. Here's the recorded interview with Professor Cheryl Delaray next. CliffCentral.com.